Blog Talk Radio.
Are you with me? Hey, everyone. Bobby, are you with us?
Now I am.
There you are.
I was being editorialized. I did start out by saying good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Saturday's edition of Exploring a Crisis with Captain B2, c'est moi, and my co-pilot, Dan Deschino, who has already established his presence.
That's right. Yes. I am the co-pilot. I'm like the stewardess than the co-pilot, I think. But yes, I threw some trivia out there it looked like there was a bunch of people in the chat before. And as Felina said, yes, Felina, this would be a party if everyone is here. And I threw some trivia that no one got, but that was a song by the band Yes called Wondrous Stories. One of my favorite Yes songs. That song always gives me this, to me, it's this, it's a feel of almost like 1,000 years ago, people like literally hanging around like a campfire telling stories. I don't know why I can picture it every time I hear that song. And when I saw the great contest by that you put up, Bobby, that's the song that came to my mind. It almost a lot of the pictures almost look like Yes covers to me. They're just this very surreal science fictiony almost kind of pictures. And for your art, for the new contest, yeah. So this song came to mind.
For this evening's contest.
Yep.
Ah, okay. Oh, all right. It's funny because I like the song, but it reminded me actually of the soundtrack from a rather obscure Tom Cruise movie called Legend. And the soundtrack,
my favorite Tom Cruise movie.
Yes, it's by Tangerine Dream.
Yes, yes, yes.
It sounds very reminiscent to Tangerine Dream. May I have to resurrect some of that music for one of our intros. It's wonderful
absolutely,
music.
Absolutely, absolutely. You should watch I bought a really interesting thing for anybody who's never seen Legend. It's a phenomenal movie.
I
forget the guy's name. You'll tell me right away. But the star of the Rocky Horror Picture Show played the devil. What's his name? Who is he?
Yeah, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry, the guy. He's phenomenal as the devil. One of my favorite lines from that movie was, he says, I'm like the girl that's in, I don't want to spoil for anybody, but the girl in there, she says, I'm just a child. And he goes, we are all children, my dear. I don't know why that I always love that line. But there's a, Bobby, I don't know if you've ever seen this. I bought a director's cut of that movie. I'm not, if you've never seen it, Bobby, it is a completely different movie. I'm watching this with my wife. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. It's so much better. The music is different. It is like a completely different movie, almost, because I guess he didn't like what they did to it. So Ridley Scott did this movie, by the way.
Yes,
you
I
should
know.
Totally look up the director's cut. You're gonna be like, oh my god, like I've never seen this before. It's amazing,
yeah.
The director's cut.
55, that's early in his career. And a lot of people don't realize that Ridley Scott did. That was Mia Sara, by the way, who was also, I believe, the co-star opposite
Matthew Broderick.
I'm gonna kill Thank you. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, that was I think
that was
Ferris Bueller. So I think she was even young.
Yep.
I think she was even younger. But yeah, a very young Tom Cruise. I think it was either right before or right after Risky Business. But it's a great fantasy movie by Ridley Scott. It's very unfortunately obscure. It's a sleeper one, but you gotta find, everybody's gonna find it.
Yeah, it's a cult flick. A lot of people
Absolutely.
Don't realize that it's around. It's a fantasy adventure. Has some it's a good storyline. Has some legendary character actors in it. I mean, you've got Billy Barty, who you don't see in too many more films after that. He's one of the original dwarf character actors from Hollywood that he played in, I believe, Wizard of Oz. But he was in a lot of other films. I'm looking to see if that was one of. He was also in L.A. Heat. It was one of his last films. But I'm wrong. He was in a lot more films after that. But Billy Barty was in it, and I'm trying to think. Robert Picardo, who anyone who recognizes that name, he was the hologram medical officer for Voyager.
Yeah,
it was Robert Picardo who played Meg Mugglebones, this weird-looking character. Some wonderful character actors in it.
And we have we have somebody at the door here. So who wants to join us tonight?
Pizza delivery.
Who do we have on?
Who's there?
Anybody on?
It was a pizza delivery.
I'm not sure. Ben, are you Ben? Is that you?
Over.
Are you on? Ben, if you're on, you might be on mute.
Entirely possible. But,
all right, Ben, just interrupt us if you get the mute on. I think you're on, so just interrupt us if you when you're there and say hi. But yeah, no, that's a fantastic movie, and yeah, I thought that was a good song for tonight. But we have all kinds of fun stuff tonight, so we have some leftovers. We have three songs from last time.
Yeah, and we are going to have such. I got to say, I'm going to say naughty words here. We're going to have a bitch of a time judging this. These poems are so freaking good. I was reading them going, oh, I'm tearing up my hair already. I'm like, oh, my God. Throw these up in the air. Just, you know, pick whatever one lands on me. Seriously, they're really, I mean, folks responded so quickly and so prolifically to this artist. I was really very surprised. I'm trying to make up for my truancy on the Petrie contest. So I've already launched our new contest for our next show. That's already out there, and we've already got two entries.
Awesome. We're popular.
Yeah,
we're popular.
Yeah. Well,
I told you,
all you
bullies in high school, I'd be popular someday. So there you go.
Yeah. I think they said infamous. Wasn't that the word they used?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they said infamous. Exactly. Yeah, they were right about that. So Ben is on, but he says his microphone is acting up. No problem, Ben. Do try to do some magic on it and just, interrupt us and say hi if you get it on. But it might be a mute button on your microphone.
Absolutely. Or what is it, one tap for yes and two for no?
Yeah. I have, three different mute buttons everywhere, Ben, so you could have, mute. Mutation buttons all over the place.
I myself am having the squirrels are in my server, I think, because I'm having my own variety of computer problems. I think I'm going to have to reboot this beast after the show, because every time I try and bring something up, it tells me this site can't be reached, and every time I call bullshit, then it comes up. But it's not without it being notional. So anyway, let's. Let's get started. We don't have but a few carryovers,
yep.
One of which is conveniently provided with a SoundCloud.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm going to post the first one on here and give Ben one more shout-out here. Ben, are you there? I'm going to count to five in my head. Are you still mutating? But interrupt, Ben. I'm going to be very rude and not go ladies first. I'm going to read this one because I think the next one's a little more.
No,
for a lady-like, so I'll read this one. This
age
is,
before I go age before
there, right. There you go, exactly. So first one from last show is by Eski. This is, for those of you following along from the last show, is prop number four. And this is called New Deal Autonomy for Century 21. Excuse me. This equality, the ubiquitous goal, counts for nothing without control. Individual status, the perverse skewed angle in this New Deal autonomy for Century 21. Gestapo finance breeds antisocial cohesion. Descanted naivety breeds synchronized disparity. Triumphal arches celebrate poundland utopia, saddling graffiti-riddled concrete horses. Reductive chromium someplace staging posts. Dimaxium force-driven final solutions galvanized by intended minimal resource where madmen triangulate distorted reason. Malignant mercury cloud piss incongruent rain. Forlorn rimmed spectacles misted in mainstream. Propagate bracket here and nows in transgender illusion. Trampling tensions under blown glass ceilings. Maniacal monologue delivered in incomprehensible tongue, the orator's sanity questioned because you don't understand, an ovine infection all bleeding in unison, ignoring the lie of your promised land. End poem. That was a mouthful to read. I should have had you do that. But what do you?
No, it's nice variety.
What do you think? Let's start with you,
and then
we'll see if Ben's on after that. So go ahead and comment, Bobby.
We'll do a sound check with Ben. This has got some really clever wordplay in it. Trampoline tensions under blown glass ceilings. I mean, that the visual imagery that creates is just really That's quite creative. I mean, that is really really a challenge under blown glass ceilings. Forlorn rim spectacles misted in mainstream propagate bracket here and now in transgender illusion. Like I said, the maniacal monologue delivered in incomprehensible tongue. There's great alliteration in this. There's great assonance and some really stellar wordplay. This is a really, really adroit, really cerebral writing. This is one of those reads that you definitely have to sit down and very carefully reread it a couple of times, slowly digesting and sipping each stanza for full effect, because this is a really this write took a lot of thinking, so it requires that same consideration when it's read. So I really enjoyed this. It was a very impressive ride.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is for kind of like an apocalyptic was the last theme in the show, and I can feel that in this. I do like the, I'm guessing it's a play on words of Century 21 instead of Century 21,
yeah.
So I like that. I'm going to take that as a play on words, so yeah, I like it.
Because I thought there was a clever play on words, especially since his prompt was he selected the collateral damage one, which has a lot of, it's really rich with imagery. And so he had a lot to choose from, and I think the way he interpreted that particular prompt was very, very skillful. So
absolutely.
Kudos to this ride.
And I like the what I liked about it too was the I believe the way what Eski's trying to saying with this is just kind of the craziness of the world now, and I like all of the. Adjectives that he's using in here. It kind of almost seems a little chaotic, but it's organized chaos. And the way that he's doing it, it makes it really beautiful of that organized chaos. And I do like, he's got even some, you know, current things he's got in here about the, you know, his take. I'm not going to take political sides, but, you know, transgender illusion, trampling tensions in the blown glass ceiling. So he's even very, very, you know, topical, we will say. So that, the way he composed it, it was very beautiful, and like you said, a lot of great descriptions.
It was a nice job, Eski. The only downside was we had so many really terrific pieces in this contest that I think I ended up because it doesn't show on here because this is a personal thing, but I invented something I call overflow honorable mentions, and it's when I run out of honorable mentions because Kevin will only allow us to have five. And I find that there's way more than that in many of our contests. So I do something personal called what I call it the overflow honorable mentions. And I will usually send this person points and thank them for a good piece. So it's my way of saying thank you. And I can't do an award. And I think this is one of them.
Ben, one more time, he might be on. Ben, are you there?
Pop check. Test one.
Nope. All right, no problem, Ben. Just feel free to interrupt at any time if you
Ben said sent me a note earlier. This is a new system for him, so this is his shakedown cruise. So this is where he gets this is where he gets read out all the bugs and all the little glitches in the system. And so I'm sure next time around we will have the full and real and actual Ben as opposed to the virtual Ben.
There were no points lost for technical issues.
What's that? Ben is one of our entries already on the new contest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, great, yeah. Great, Ben. Yeah, no, I said no points lost for technical issues, Ben, so no worries. All right, let's crank along
all right,
here.
Let me write
so. I have I put one up for you. This is by Lauren Lord. Ooh. This is called Bip. So if you want to give this one a shot.
Vampire. Okay, let me pull this one up and give it its own link. Okay, we have – oh, yeah, this is one of the posters I had in my apartment. Vampire 52. Vampire 52. Night falls and day breaks, and like our love, it seems like it never ends. I'm so tired picking up the pieces of my heart and what's left of your soul. Caught between my lust and your desire, a rock and a hard place where I can't leave and you won't go. The end poem.
Very, very interesting, and I thought that picked the prompt beautifully.
Yeah.
And he, and what I have to go back, and I didn't do this before, he seems to have, you know, it's vampire LI because he's had multiple ones, so he's got a whole list of them with this.
Yeah, well,
this title on it.
Yeah, but if you're looking at the Greek, if you're looking at Roman numerals, that's 52.
Right. So he it seems like he has multiple on here, so I'll have to look and see what he has for other poems. But night falls and day breaks like our love. It seems it never ends. I can see the, I like the caught between my lust and your desire, a rock and a hard place. And he's got that in just the picture itself where the person is turning kind of to, you know, at the bottom of the picture, anybody following along, you can see the both people are embraced and they're turning into stone completely. So almost like permanently, you know, attached where I can't leave and you won't go. So like you just, it's something that just can't kind of end. So very, very, you know, you would think of Vampira could be a little bit, more on the evil side. This is very loving.
It looks less to me. It always struck me like it's not so much that they're turning to stone as they're being constructed.
Yes.
It looks like a construction site to me, or they're being carved. So it's almost like they're being manufactured. That's what it struck me as. So, but I always found it fascinating. That's why it was up on my wall. Until I put so many thumbtack holes in it, it just fell apart. So, anyway, but yeah, I enjoyed this also. I'm going to start following him. I'm going to have to look into more of his pieces. I also like that same passage, caught between my lust and your desire, a rock and a hard place where I can't leave and you won't go. That's really interesting. I really found that for a brevity, this is really intriguing. I enjoyed it thoroughly. So, and I thought a very, very resourceful, very, very imaginative interpretation of the prompt. And I don't think anyone else really chose that prompt either. So I can't recall though.
We have the
incomparable Pam Ray left as our cleanup batter, and so
we do, and we have just to make sure we have credit due before we play that, is we do have both Gray and I believe Phil in the background, and Robbie just joined on the
we have our founding person Phil. Oh my goodness.
I saw her kind of, checking in there here and there, so that's really great. And Robbie said he's got to get out of his own.
Yeah, make me glad I did a little dusting before we started.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's checking up on us. That's why. All right, and rightly so. I wouldn't trust me either. So she's checking up on us. Exactly. Robbie said, I need to get out of my own headspace, so I swung here in by to hear other people's poetry. That's always a good thing. I hear you, Robbie. I hear you. All right, so, yes, I posted Pam's on the board, so if we could get that SoundCloud played, that would be great.
Yes.
They had begun their search within their spirits, knowing through faith that paradise existed, but faith must be put into action. And so the journey began, men, women, and children blindly following naught but blind faith and stories of a northern star to a land that flowed with milk and honey. It would be a land of love and harmony, of poetry and music. The elders spoke of how there would be no war, but only long-awaited peace. Some of the warriors had grumbled, saying, "Where will we find purpose and honor if not in the glory of battle?" The women spoke up, saying, "We will be boarding the ship. We will be making the voyage to paradise." When the warriors heard there would be no women with soft curves to warm the bed and diligent hands to knead the bread and prepare the stew to satisfy a man's hunger, they realized war was a cold, cruel mistress who would gladly starve her followers and lead them into pyres of blood. The sturdy ships sailed upon the rise and fall of ocean waves, where beneath lurked horrid beasts with ferocious appetites. 10 moon cycles had passed, supplies were dwindling, and hope was becoming scarce. It seemed the gods were malicious tricksters dangling promises of nirvana as if it were the carrot that led the burdened ass. Faith is a heavy weight to bear. And still the people carried it, offering up benediction and offerings of smoke and fire to deities who seemed indifferent to souls that ached for paradise and flesh that died so the living may taste its fruit. End poem.
Excellent, Pam. I love Pam's voice. Always great to hear her. And Bobby.
Outstanding.
I'm sure I have lots to say, so go for it.
Well, first off, what leapt off the page at me was her archaic spelling of soul. I really liked that little attention to detail, Pam. That was really I liked using language when the piece calls for it. So I thought that was a lovely touch and very subtle. But that is our Pam. Second of all, this is tremendous storytelling. I mean, her interpretation of this prompt clearly. And what's interesting is if you look at the vessel in the picture, there are no sails. It's all oars, which I thought was interesting. And so whatever they're doing, they're propelling themselves forward. They're not using the winds to send them, unless it's something that they've laid it down, but that didn't seem to be reasonable that they would have a collapsible mast. That just doesn't make any sense. But the journey began, men, women, blindly following naught but blind faith and stories of a northern star. And interesting how very much we realize that in looking at history and the stories that have been passed down, that very, very often these ventures forth were with blind faith. They were based on stories that other people had brought back to them, some true, some partially true, some fables, imaginings of other people, but it would be a land of love and harmony, of poetry and music. But the warriors grumbled, saying, "Where would we find purpose and honor?" And the women spoke up. This is interesting storytelling. It gives all the different facets of the culture. And when the warriors realized that they would be on their trek alone, their sojourn alone, the sturdy ship sailed upon the rise and fall of ocean waves, where beneath lurked horrid beasts with voracious appetites. Dwindling hope had become scarce. This is really a wonderful, almost an epic storytelling based on the prompt. So I think really enjoyed. And interestingly enough, our queen of the metaphor really did not share too many metaphors in this. This is straight storytelling, and quite excellent.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a little bit different than I normally see from her. I agree.
It is absolutely.
But I think it's.
But all it does is prove how multifaceted Pam's writing is. So there's a treat to get another side of Pam's writing. Like I said, usually she is usually very rich in metaphor. And what struck me on this one is that it's almost bereft of metaphors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did like her storytelling a lot. You know, it's the feel of this, and it's very funny. I actually kind of wrote a couple of poems the last couple of days and thought about almost the same idea that she's getting here and with this picture. I had thought, you know, you think about the explorers and the sailing today, but then you got to think about people, you know, you got to think about people 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, who are on these wooden ships crossing the ocean. So
they were tiny.
Yeah. Exactly. So not these giant ocean liners with radar and with, you know, with navigation systems and all stuff. You're talking about
those things are floating, they're floating cities. They're like an aircraft carrier.
Yep.
It's like a floating military base. Yeah, if you look at the size, if you look at the metrics on the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, the first time I saw the measurements, I'm like, no freaking way you're going to get me on one of these things. And they spent months on them. You know, and just being led by the blind faith. So yeah, she tells a story with a lot of emotion, and she makes you feel how they felt out there. So it's really, really superb, excellent storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
So yes,
we have polished off our three, count them three, and we're only 30 minutes into the show. Three. Carryovers. So now we get to plunge forward into the new poet. Or the new
Yes, we do. Go ahead, Bobby, and I know you want to talk, so tell us about the new one.
As my Irish friend used to say, go on with your know.
Go ahead.
Okay. let me pull up the there we go. Oh, there it is. I moved my tab and lost it. There it is. Okay. I usually try and open the contest up before the show starts. We have the mysterious photo manipulations of Michael Vincent Manalo. And as I'm researching these artists, it is striking me how very many of them now are photo, are digital artists. The one that put up now, Daria Petrilli, she's also a photo artist. It's amazing, but with modern technology, what it is allowing the artist to do with subject matter, both real and manufactured. When I found Michael Vincent Manalo, I thought that his style would be a nice, quiet change to the very vivid depictions of Petrie and the artist we had prior to Petrie, whose name I cannot remember. I thought these would be subdued and take the writing perhaps in a different direction. And I that was a good call on my that people seem to more than I realized really were intrigued and inspired by artist Manalo's work. So a matter of fact, we have for the first time I think ever. We have a collaboration in this contest. Did you see that?
I did not, but I believe you.
You are going to freaking love it. We have a collaboration between Stellina and Arcana Amour. They have a SoundCloud. I've already listened to it. This is going to be a real treat for our audience because they did a superb job on it. So without the labor... And of course, I did all the write-up and everything about the artist. So, you know, if you want more detail, please. Yeah, because what I do is I don't write these bios. I go out there to their websites or to magazines that have featured them. And I will extract. I'll do extractions from those bios. And that's why I put resources down at the bottom, because among those resources is usually where I find the bio material. So I do attribution in my resources at the bottom. There's all this. I like to include the information so you can see. And we've been spanning the globe on our artists. This is the first Filipino artist we've had, we've got an Italian from Rome come on the next one. So let's go ahead and dive into these, because we've got some really amazing poetry here.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. So we'll get to the collaboration in a little bit. And I think Ben is still working on trying to call in. So Ben, I'm going to hold off on yours for a little, but we will start with the one I posted by Damn It Dave. It's a brevity called Curtain Call, and it's to Prop 12, again, for those following along. Curtain Call.
Okay.
I'm just an actor on a stage. I say my lines and play my part. Yet curtain calls cannot assurge the script of love within my heart. Each word I write, each scene and act are feelings of a soul laid bare. A role I've written just for us. The leads are ours alone to share. I beg you, darling, play the part. Let sweet love echo off the walls. Please be the starlet in my life until the final curtain falls. End poem. I did a great I messed up the very last word. I couldn't have done everyone. Sorry about that. Damn it. Damn it, Dave. But anyway, awesome little brevity, and go for it, Bobby.
Yeah, it's not often we get brevities, but they're of a quality that they're unmistakably very, very fine writing. I'm just an actor on a stage. I say my lines and play my part. Yet curtain calls cannot assuage the script of love within my heart. What a wonderful opening! And he is taking each word I write, each scene and act. He's the author. He's the author of the play, and he's begging his partner. I beg you, darling, play the part. Please be the starlet in my life. And when I posted this picture, which is remarkably simple, it is it's predominantly curtains. It's a long picture of very, very enormous tall curtains. It almost looks like sky at the top, and this minuscule, tiny, almost indiscernible figure between the curtains at the bottom. And I thought to myself, I wonder if this is going to generate a piece and what kind of writing it's going to inspire. And I really like what he did with this, because it's to me, it's a match. I never would have thought of taking that particular prompt in this direction. So I love what he did with it. I love its brevity. I think it's a wonderful piece of writing, and I really enjoyed it. And I have to thank him for being our first entry.
Absolutely. As always, thanks, Dave. I love his stuff. And, yeah, it is a really interesting take on that. I wouldn't have gone there either, but I love how that goes. So the curtain, you know, how he saw that in there, and that is the beauty of art, right? We can all see different things. So yet curtain calls cannot surge the script of love within my heart. Each word I write, each scene I act, feelings of soul by bear, a role of written just for us. So he's he is taking that as this huge giant curtain, you know, it's like this ego on an enormous stage, he's taking that as kind of the, you know, the love of his life. Please be the starlet in my life until the final curtain falls. So he's taking, I believe, the, you know, that all the world's a stage, right? Everybody's, you know, we are players. So his life is you know, the stage, and you know, making it that love song. So beautiful, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that you drew that parallel. I would not have thought of that. So good eye. Well, by the way, that's pronounced assuage.
Assuage. Yeah, I had two feelings, Bobby. One, I was pronouncing it wrong, and two, you were going to tell me how to pronounce it correctly. So,
I mean that with all love.
Meaning like you're not meaning like you were going to. not meaning something bad, meaning like you know, yeah, meaning like you knew the word. I knew you about
the
word. So.
And I had two feelings, too. One was to pronounce it for you, and the other one was just shut my damn mouth.
No, the first one is correct. I don't think we've had a show yet where I haven't proved myself wrong at least a couple of times on the show. So I am not below self-deprecation at all, which seems to be the thing I'm the best at in life is showing me. So I am no
Dublin of little minds.
That's right. Let's move on. No, I appreciate that. I also learned something pretty much usually every show. I think I learned something too. So that's my thing so far today. I learned a surge. I get that one. All right, cool.
And Robbie's made a comment. He said, I was just listening to a couple of Loreen McKennitt songs before coming on. This fits the idea of a higher state of being. I love Loreen McKennitt. She's a Canadian recording artist. Who unfortunately to my eternal chagrin does not perform in the United States. The one contest she had in Philadelphia, I was not able to get to. She performs in Europe.
But interesting.
Very, very eclectic selection. She does Celtic. She does Middle Eastern. I mean, she draws from a lot of different flavors. And she actually also uses very often classical poetry as her song lyrics. She used the Lady of Shalott. She also used W.B. Yeats' The Stolen Child as song lyrics. Beautiful song. I mean, really. So if you're looking for a new recording artist to explore, try out Loreen McKennitt. She's got some great stuff out there. Anyway, moving right along,
speaking of self-deprecation, if you're looking for a higher state of being and you're listening to our show, have fun with that one. Exactly. But we have lots of music and movie references we like to do. But
Robbie. I was watching Guardians of the Galaxy last week, and at the beginning of the film, the Galaxy 2, which is where it introduces Peter Quill's father and his mother when they meet. At the beginning of the film, she says to the character who is being played by my eternal crush, Kurt Russell, she says, I don't understand a word you're saying, but I love the way you say it.
There you go. Kurt Russell, he was good in that.
Years older than me, and I've been crushing on him since I was 12.
He's a I see it. I got it. All right, cool. So your turn up here, and you get the honor of reading Jenny Hunt.
All right. Oh, good. Okie doke. We have alternate reality, awakened in a coma. What an intriguing title. I read this as soon as it came out because I went, whoa, I got to see where this is going. So here we go by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Lost in disorientating, lost in disorientation. Let me try this again. I can do this. Lost in disorientation, transcending from the broken pendulum swing, watching levitating adamant objects as the children sadly sing, spinning on delusional hazy hallucinogens. Can't escape insanity's endless trepidations. Ascending into the hypnotic abyss, free-falling from the bionic heavens, slate-smoked silver clouds descend from invisible imaginary islands I find myself wanting to defend. Floating houses going higher and higher above the dreary diabolical clouds, they burst into flame. Past the silky sapphire horizon, hallucinations lies opportunists imprisoned by manipulations. Wetlands whisper wary woes worsening in time. Concrete canvases cemented in corroded stone of lime. Keeping secrets safe, tucked inside. Maybe opening Pandora's box wasn't a bright idea in hindsight. End poem.
Excellent read as always, Bobby. And I believe I won't you know, quote myself on this one, but I believe we had some Pandora's Box references in the last show with this, because it was, you know, it's all about kind of, you know, the apocalypse, and you know that is always a great topic. Lost in disorientation, transcending from the broken pendulum swing. And I'm going to kind of take an idea off of Phil, who I think is listening at some point tonight, where she inspired me to look at poems in a different way, because she had said that, like, if you take the first line of each poem, that can, and it creates a poem itself, that can be a sign of a good one. I'm going to take the first line and the last line. Lost in disorientation, transcending from the broken pendulum swing. Maybe opening Pandora's box wasn't a bright idea in hindsight. And I think it works like that. You can take it just like that. You know, lost in disorientation. I mean, even just that right there, that really is the hindsight to evil. You know, I always said if people are doing evil, doing bad things, they're always justifying it, right? I'm just going to take a famous one like Hitler. You know, Hitler in his mind, this is the thing I need to do. This is correct. I'm justified doing what I'm doing. And just like every other crazy serial killer maniac, you know, he committed suicide maybe because it's like, you know, I think about that recent, unfortunately probably wasn't the most recent, but when the transgender person that went into a school and killed people, I believe she killed herself, I believe. But anyway, a lot of times you have these mass murderers, mass, you know, shooters that kill themselves because for whatever reason, they're lost in disorientation, right? They believe this is a good idea. I should be doing this. And then they open up their Pandora's box and they do this thing and they're like, what did I do? And I think, you know, all of these, so I think that's a great, you know, kind of way, at least that's what I got out of it, Jenny, but it's a great way of kind of, you know, describing Pandora's box and all of the, which I'll let Bobby, you know, comment on all of the great descriptions in here about, you know, what can happen, the hallucinations, manipulations, and all of this. You know, when you do open that Pandora's box, I think it was beautifully done. And this is a little bit of a different feel for Jenny as well, too, that I've seen before. So Bobby, we're seeing kind of different feels from people, which is always great to inspire.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, your references were actually thinly veiled a reference to Shakespeare, because
yes.
Because if you look at The Merchant of Venice, mark you this, Bassanio, the devil can cite scripture for his purpose, an evil soul producing holy witness is like a villain with a smiling cheek, a goodly apple rotting, a goodly apple rotting at the heart. Oh, what goodly outside falsehood hath! So that's exactly what you're saying there. You know that the villains in the world can justify what they're doing. The devil can cite scripture for his purpose, which I've always thought is an interesting quote, and unfortunately comes to fruition all too often. So, but this is a very clever write, and if you've noticed from this one I'm going to approach from a technical point of view. Clearly, the content is superlative. Great storytelling. There are some absolutely top-notch metaphors in here. But if you look, you'll also see some really superb examples of assonance, of consonants, of alliteration, the rhyme patterns. Very subtle. Higher, fire. Hallucinations, manipulations, some complex, very complex rhyme. Inside, hindsight, which is a good example of assonance. We got this lime and time, which are straightforward swing and sing. Hallucinations, trepidation. I haven't enjoyed a rhyme combination that much since I did one that where I rhymed she danced terpsichorean to melodies Gregorian. I did that in one of my limericks. I was pretty proud of that. Yeah, there's some, from a technical point of view, this is a really a very fine piece of writing. There's a lot of poetic expertise woven through this. You have to admire just from the technical point of view, and also just from, this is another one of those pieces that requires a slow assimilation, a systematic reading it and deliberating over what's being said, because clearly this is a very cerebral write that took a lot of thought and a lot of, this was not written so much as it was assembled in the way it's done. It is so meticulously, painstakingly created. I really admire the way this piece was done. You can see a lot of work went into this.
Yeah, I agree. And that Shakespeare quote about, you know, that you said about the devil knowing the scriptures is a great quote, and that is 100% true. You know, it's not the easy devil that, like Hitler, like I mentioned, that's not the person you have to watch out for. It's the one that pretends to be good. You know, the devil can quote the scriptures, and Trump can stand in front of a church holding a Bible upside down. Sorry,
like
I had
said,
to say it. I try not to be political. I try not to be religious on here. Everybody can send me all the letters. I just had to say it. Sorry. Send me your letters. I can take it. But anyway.
Yeah. Like you said, for the whole thing, an evil soul producing holy witness is like a villain with a smiling cheek, a goodly apple rotten at the heart.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Interesting.
It's malice concealed by a benevolent rapper.
It's not the crocodiles you can see that you have to worry about, right?
Yeah. I've always said in my own brusque Marine Corps way that I have more respect for a person who will stand toe-to-toe with me, tell me to eat dirt and die, than someone who smiles in my face and then buries silverware between my shoulder blades.
Yep, exactly. All right, cool. So
all right,
I was gonna read the next one, but you guys are all in treat because we have a SoundCloud, and I don't know if we have a. Do we have somebody else that called in?
Oh!
I think we might have somebody that called in.
You peeked out the window.
Who do we have?
I don't know. Let's answer the door.
Anyone there?
Hello. We got the neighborhood kids running the door. The doorbell here.
Yep. Robbie, are you there?
I'm here.
I think it sounds like, yeah, we got like people running. Is it going to be like a bag I'm going to step on in the front or something? Happening?
Well, you know,
okay. You didn't unmute me, I don't think.
Oh,
there you are, Robbie.
Is that
Robbie? I heard it go unmuted, and then and then you heard me. So I think you just didn't mute me, didn't unmute me. We're all getting discombobulated now.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
We're glad to have you here, but Ben is jealous, he just said, because he's been trying to get in for the last hour. So
we can make a Bobby sandwich now.
Ben, Robbie, did you get to hear Jenny's poem or read it?
I was listening, but I was like multitasking with some other stuff in the background. I'm just gonna have to wait till the next poem to comment, because
okay.
I didn't get
you have homework.
No worries.
Yeah, but you have a homework assignment. You have to go back and reread that.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, it's a good piece. It really is.
All right, so I posted Stelena's, and if we could get that SoundCloud, that would be fantastic.
Oh, You're going to enjoy this. And a hush falls over the crowd. Someone teeing that up.
Are
we teeing that up? Oh, I hear hissing.
I don't see a SoundCloud, guys.
Oh, no. No, please tell me that's
not. Let's move on. Let me see if I can find it.
I see the link in chat. I see the link in chat, but I don't hear anything yet.
That's all right. Let's move on to another one, and I'll see if I can post it. I mean, I posted it before, and I thought it said it was done. That's okay. Let's move on, and we post it and see if we can get it on there.
Yeah,
so,
please, because that's really, really superb SoundCloud.
If not, we'll definitely get to it next time if we have to, if it comes to that. But so it's the one for Stelina.
Okay.
And I can repost it. Let's go on. So, Robbie, you get to read this one here. I just posted it. This is by Maggie M. So it is all yours when you can do that.
Did you post it?
Okay. And this is when spirits dance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a collaborative between Stelina and Arcana Amor.
No. I'm sorry. Not that one. I apologize. It is this one. It is Maggie M.
Oh,
if you refresh, it should come up.
Hold on a sec.
There we go.
Oh, in the cradle. I got it now. In the cradle. Okay. Here we go. In the cradle, there's a place where my body rests, perfectly still, surrounded by wind, grass, flowers, sea, sandstone. The curve of a wooded hillside, the face of a woman upturned toward the sky. She wears a gown of evergreen, her hair sparkling, silken threads spilling from under her glowing crown. In her motherly arms, like a child, I am cradled. She and I and the sky share secrets, and I cast unto them the burden of living and loving in the civil world, where people talk with words, and so often have very little to say. Sorry, end poem. I got to get in that habit. Sorry.
That's okay. I'd like to regress for just a moment on the previous piece. I've neglected, a bad host, neglected to mention that when Jenny Hunt wrote this, she referenced 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 prompts. All of which I believe have houses in them. So she was able to take a reoccurring theme and thread that into her poem. So I just wanted to acknowledge that little bit of artistry. So back to the future, back to the in the cradle. So okay, and Dan, take it away.
Sorry, I was mutating. Yeah, and Maggie did the same thing. She wrote to a bunch of prompts, which again seems to be a little bit of a theme tonight, so we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And Bobby, go ahead, you can comment.
Now, I noticed that also. I like the fact that our writers are seeing a reoccurring thread in the art of a certain artist, and are able to unify that into a particular into their particular writing. So I think that's that speaks well of both the artist and the writer to be able to see it, which and also clearly defines ekphrasis, because they're seeing an emotion go through. And here's this one. I get the sense of peace with this, a place where my body rests perfectly still, surrounded by wind grass flowers. In her motherly arms, like a child, I am cradled. She and I and the sky share secrets. There is a sense of such serenity in this piece, which I think is also another brevity, not terribly long. But she's seen peace in these different prompts, and has taken this theme of serenity, of calm, of peace, and woven it into such a beautiful piece. She wears a gown of evergreen, her hair sparkling, silken threads spilling from her crowning glory. There's just such a beauty to what she's written here.
Yeah, absolutely. Really got a sense of everything the artist kind of does and a feel of what they're saying and a togetherness,
yes,
of the painting. So that was great. Yeah, absolutely, Bobby. And Robbie, you did an awesome read. What did you think about it when you were reading it?
Well, I noticed a kind of unique sort of alliteration or flow of ideas. Like, she wears a gown of evergreen. Her hair is her hair sparkling silken threads. Oh yeah, but especially in the beginning, perfectly still, surrounded by wind grass flowers, and it's like the ideas, or it's one idea with like two or three words that flows so seamlessly into each other. And there's not like, it says like by wind, grass, flowers. It's not by wind and grass and flowers. Like it's three different elements in there, but it's one thing really. It's flowers in the grass being blown by the wind, but it's described as wind, grass, flowers. And I really like that. I haven't seen that too often. I like that seamless flow of the ideas. And even though it's not literally alliteration, it's not like, you know, like say three P words in a row or three S words in a row, or whatever. It almost feels and sounds like that because the words as a concept flow so seamlessly into each other to form one image, right? It's like the same thing with the next line, sea, sand, stone. So it almost sounds like in that case, it is there is alliteration, but it is one thing. It's a stone with two qualifiers there, but it's so seamless that it just feels like one thing, right? And that's what, thank you. It's what struck me the most about the poem, I guess, structurally. But like that structure had given the poem like a very that organic feel, which is appropriate for it being a nature-based poem. And it's kind of like in the cradle. And when I think about it, it's like the title being in the cradle. It has that soothing sing-songy thing that you would expect for
it
like
that rocking melodic cadence.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end, lastly, where it says, I almost laughed, not like, you know, like laughing at the poem or anything, but just the cosmic thing of where people talk with words and so often have very little to say. And I just, oh, God, that's so true. Like I was just very quickly, I was thinking about when I was on the bus and I heard two people go into, they phased into the platitudes, like, oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day out today, isn't it? And I knew the type of guy one of them was. And then he says, oh, well, not every day's the best. But, well, you know, some days are better than others. And they start talking about how, well, not every day is as good, but some are better than others, you know, for just like individuals, for people. I'm like, oh. It's just like, couldn't you just say that it was a nice day? Couldn't you just left it at that and not just gone and told us, like, because they're saying nothing, really, and they're just, I just hated hearing, just the same old thing that everybody says, you know?
Yeah, the cliche 101, because some people are so uncomfortable with the vacuum that they need to fill it with useless noise, and their useless, unfortunately, is their voice.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my pet peeves in life. That's one of my, like, top five least favorite things to encounter. Do not do that.
yeah. I agree with you. I used to ride the metro to work, and one of my irritations, other than the long-standing one of using the word like too much to punctuate your conversation, I heard that joke, was people who talk so loudly. You know, you can't help but be part of their conversation. Okay. I remember one time there was this young, these two young women sitting across, clearly in their 20s, and was sitting across from them. And there was this very, very, stage whisper animated conversation going on. And they got off at the next stop, and I turned to the person next to me, and I said, damn. I said, now I'm not going to know how the conversation ended.
But and it's made even worse if you, like, when they're shouting a conversation, if it's something like,
"Oh yeah,
oh, so did you hear that so and so got pregnant? Oh yeah, yeah, she got knocked up again,"
yeah.
And all that. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's bad enough that you're shouting things, but you know, you're shouting like the
incredibly
private things or things you just never want to hear.
Yeah. That's if you want to read something, and I agree with your observation on the to redirect back to the poem, that the last two lines or last three lines could almost be a brevity unto themselves.
Huh.
But if you want to read something interesting, it's not a recent publication. It may be out of print, but there's a cross-cultural linguistics professor at Georgetown named Deborah Tannen, who wrote a book in the 80s called That's Not What I Meant. And it's actually about cross-cultural linguistics and how very often people from different cultures have trouble communicating with each other. And one of the things that is interesting is Americans, we have the largest personal space of any culture on the planet. And how very often some of the things that are done by some other cultures are misunderstood by us, and conversely, things that we do are misunderstood by other cultures. That same thing with loud conversations. They say that Americans are very loud.
Well, I'm a Canadian, so we're known for saying sorry all the time.
What's it all about? You guys have the reputation for being the politest culture on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the sorry thing. Yeah, we do the aboot thing, and we're constantly saying, "Oh, sorry." Like, you know, like when there's, I noticed that even as myself as a Canadian, that now that it's pointed out to me, I'll be like crossing the street and I'll accidentally cross someone else, just as they're crossing, and then they'll say, "Oh, sorry," and then they'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry," and I tell myself, "You're not going to see that in other countries." They're going to be like, "Get out of my way."
No.
In Massachusetts here, when we cross the street, we say sorry too, but we say it with one of our fingers. So a different way.
Which one?
But we have, yeah, exactly. One of the big ones in the middle somewhere.
There's a cultural difference in Europe. When you cross the street, they just body check you and don't make eye contact. I learned that when my first trip to Europe was a ski vacation. And after walking through the village where we were skiing, which was Val Gardena in Italy, and getting body checked constantly, I realized, okay, there's two techniques I can use: the New York technique or the New Jersey technique. And one involves extending your elbow; the other one involves lowering your shoulder. I just started running into people. You know,
both of them involve a lot of four-letter words.
No cussing. They'll just body check you and keep running going. It's all cultural.
Well, we have two things, one good, one bad. So Ben has finally given up and succumbed to the technical dragon, but he will, I'm sure, figure it out and come on some other day. But we're glad to keep you on the board, Ben. That's good. But the good news is that our poetry equivalent of a broken guitar string has been fixed, and we have the SoundCloud from Stelina and Arcana. So if you want to play that, Man Behind the Curtain,
yes,
we will give that a read. We'll give that a listen.
Yes, let's not tempt the fate. Let's play that.
Haunting phantasmas, whisper of tides gone by.
The melted spectres float fondly through hallowed halls.
Once bustling blithesomely mid arias of mellifluous music.
Now, mere idyllic essences and spectres.
In a child's gaze of dreamscapes, born of idyllic illusions.
These vaporous visitants yield visions of their former glory.
Faded facades don alabaster costumes of shimmering silk.
Enticing her into realms of fairy fantasies and mystical musings
of transcendent tales told through alluring angelic ensemble,
pirouetting in ethereal enchantments of beguiling ballets.
These elegant encounters lead recitals from the past
in theatrical renditions of mesmerizing masquerades,
as innocence embraces this twirling Orphic opera
that spirals into fantasies founded in fairy tales,
where pallid princesses prance with their princes,
whirling on foaming seas of snow-white doves.
Awesome job. What a great production. I always love it when people put that much time and work into it, with the music and the effects on the words and obviously there'd be some editing there. So thank you, Stelina and Arcana, for putting that much work into it in that beautiful SoundCloud. Robbie, you get to start.
When I was listening, even more than the previous poem, this had that alliterative sort of cadence to it. And what I found interesting was the way their voices melted so well into each other, because like there was a lot of times here where I would have thought that the same voice would have continued with two or three other lines, but it switched over to the other voice. But even though it was like only one or two lines, it was done so seamlessly that it didn't really have a negative impact on the poem. It actually really gave an interesting quality to it. And it had that very, very much like, I felt like there was a story, a complete story pretty much like within each stanza. And this is one of those ones that I definitely want to listen to again and read, because I feel like there's a lot of story here to unpack, and I want to myself to get a better idea of how each one flows into the other. And, yeah, the way they use the music that they use fit perfectly with it. It felt like one of those almost ghostly sort of stories. And, yeah, just like the overall atmosphere. It's one of those pieces where everything really did fit well together, like with the picture, and then the way the music synced up with the words and the overall feel of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot that you can look at with this, and I like, you know, you could take it almost as horror, but I like how this is, it's beautiful, and you know, there's beautiful words and not beautiful words, right? Like cacophonous is a harsh sounding word, whereas mellifluous and gossamer are beautiful words, which they use a lot in here, right? Pirouetting, and it's angelic. So they're making this kind of this beautiful, and the music made it the same way. So I really enjoyed that. Bobby, I know you've been waiting to comment on this one.
I got to say something. I hate to be critical, but I don't know about our sound system, because when I listened to their SoundCloud on my computer, it came out much clearer with a lot of, I don't know about if we've got what our quality, our transmission medium is, but we get a lot of static, and it tended to obscure the beauty of what we had done, what they had done early on at the beginning of their performance. But this is clearly,
I think it's the translations, like over, like it's from theirs and it goes into ours and it comes over here and then we're listening into it on, like, you know, our phone. Like, I think sometimes that, you know, can get lost.
Yeah.
But I hear you on that. Yeah, there was a little bit,
yeah,
of a,
unfortunately, there's a quality, there's a quality loss there. Yeah, and so
I would
encourage our audience to go ahead and play this for themselves on the computer, because the musical background, the musical interlude, does not overpower the speech like it does in our transmission here, and what they've given in their alternating of the readings, which I as I was sitting here, I kept thinking, how do they do that? You know, unless they're co-located. I mean, this has got to be another miracle of modern technology. But this is, first off, the SoundCloud, which we all seem to be spellbound by. It's just this wonderful, wonderful performance art, beautiful. I mean, this is just took a poem that when I posted that particular image, I looked at it and I thought, I know somebody's going to jump on this one because it just had so much to say. But I was wondering what it was going to say and who it was going to say it to. And the collaboration couldn't have made me happier. Two superb poets, and to see what they had done with this. And Robbie, you're absolutely right. This is a festival of of alliteration. This is alliteration. This is an alliteration fest. They had far too much fun with this. I'm reading along. I'm thinking, where is it? Vaporous visitations yield visions of fading facades, alabaster costumes of shimmering silk, fiery fantasies and mystical musings of transcendent tales. And through alluring angelic assemblies, pirouetting in ethereal enchantments of beguiling ballets. That sounded like some crap that I'd have pulled, you know, but they had a good time doing that. And it's so balanced. It is so,
yeah,
it,
balanced.
I
totally agree with the balance part. Yeah.
Very balanced. It doesn't look like artifice. It is, it's storytelling, but it's embroidered storytelling with style. This is just panache that has added to the storytelling. It's a poetic device that is used quite artfully and skillfully here. And the same thing with the assonance. It's beautiful the way they've done this. But you're right. This is an alliteration festival.
I forgot to mention it gave me those tingles. You know, like some people call it ASMR, but, you know, I got those those body tingles, the goosebumps. Like I could see the goosebumps on my arm just because the music was so well done. And just the whole atmosphere of it. And that's my primary trigger for that kind of thing is when I hear music that I really dig. Then that's when I get like the goosebumps and
me too. I just to me music is an emotional thing and there's some of it out there is just so strongly emotional for me. At the risk of waxing anecdotal, I remember I was going from point A to point B in my vehicle many years ago. And I just discovered I live outside of D.C., and I just discovered our resident classical station. And you would think that the nation's capital would routinely have a classical station, but we almost didn't have one. But they were playing music, and they started playing Concerto de Juan Aranjuez by Rodrigo. And the first, you know, the first movement, this is pretty good. They started playing the second movement. I had to pull a car over because it was so intensely emotional to me. I couldn't drive.
Uh-huh.
And every time I hear it, I start crying. Every time I hear the piece, it's just so intensely emotional. And there's certain pieces that do that for me. That just it just brings the well. Of emotions to the forefront. And you're right. This is one of those pieces that clearly this is a performance, they have done such a polished job, not only with the storytelling, but on all fronts is a superb piece of work. The collaboration, the writing, the poetic devices that they've used. The whole and the interpretation of the prompt, which I know is a big thing for me, I couldn't be more pleased. I mean, this is a really superb piece of work. I thank Stelina and Arcana for going in together on this and giving us such a gift to produce on this on our show.
Yeah, and I agree with the music comes together. That piano player that I've played a couple of times on here, Katarina Supanetsky, I had the honor of working with her. I actually was able to, I wrote some poems and she actually wrote some original music and kind of put stuff together. And I actually got to I played one was played last night on Phil's show. And, when it comes together, it's beautiful. Robbie just said Bach's famous Prelude song is one that does for me. It's pretty much for me. I like Bach is amazing and still underrated in my opinion. And for me, it's as far as you know, symphonic music, it's either Beethoven or most things by John Williams get to me. But we have poor Ben has had a rough time tonight, so. What we're going to do is we're going to play Ben's next and get to do that. And we have yet another SoundCloud for that. So, Ben, you've been, I know, waiting patiently if you're still there. And everybody who's listening, while you're doing that, try to check out Ben's poem because he has, as usual, original artwork. But if we can get Ben's SoundCloud, that would be fantastic.
Heartbreak Horizon, a poem by Ben Hart. Part 1. The Unbeing. Flight or invisibility? What a dumb question. We're invisible already and too heavy for wings to set us free from the flat-packed prisons of depression. There's a woman, falling apart in the beautifully unhappy streets of Stuttgart, leaving the uncaring crowds to become clouds one tear at a time. She takes little trips to the sea, behind evacuating eyes, with offerings on her cheeks, so whatever ached her so would one day be the gift that bridged earth and absent sky. Contrast wasted on the other cheek. When will they learn to take a look around when there's still something to be found taking a stand against emptiness? There's a man fading away, finally giving in to the indifferent decay, the wind that leads the fields into motion, earth imitating ocean to cleanse him from her canvas. and he is glad to wilt. Become just shape among the storm, the unbeing of what's been. Because if cathedrals were built for someone no one's ever seen, imagine what they'd build for him. Part 2. A Brooklyn Ballet. There she goes, dancing to the car alarms, giving hope another chance of bruising her inside. And when the music slows, she's just a vagrant in the dark, safely entranced in the saturnine romance between joie de vivre and suicides. Getting glow-in-the-dark tattoos, a list of names karma has yet to depress, and perhaps tonight she won't drink herself to sleep. Loosening the bedsheet noose to use it as a swing instead, and at the first sign of light she can finally weep. For all the towers with their lights out, because she was once part of millions, but it only took losing you to kill Brooklyn. And though she's out of sight now, free to scream at the ducks in the pavilions, because never again will eyes halfway to blue catch her looking. She hates the fact it's not that hard being yourself in a ghost town. Part 3. Sparrow Song. Darling, what have we done? Open the door to the breakers and you were right for the taking. Someone stole the warmth of the sun and left us with none, just our failures and aching. And though I was not good at unknowns, I tried to follow you into that storm. How I hoped to be wrong, but when I heard Sparrow's song, I knew this is the end of our love. Whoever thought and I love you could hurt. You were meant to follow my words to where I gave myself back to the earth. Now who will watch me become dust? Who do I get to scream at? I'm leaving. Somehow it hurts worse to know I'm not the only one grieving. The end of our love. End poem.
Awesome, Ben. Great job. And also, again, multiple prompts. So I think this artist was definitely, you know, inspiring all around. And at the very end, Ben said, wherever we go from here, I love you. So beautiful, whoever this is written for. Bobby, go for it. You can start ladies first.
Yeah. he did this for our last contest. Gave us a piece with 5 stories in it. And he's given us one with 3. And discrete stories, but yet they seem united. He's done multiple prompts, and you can see that there's a reoccurring theme in each of them. Where does one start on this? I mean, my God, this is superb storytelling, intensely emotional. I love the colloquial start on this. Flight or invisibility? What a dumb question. We're invisible already and too heavy for wings to set us free from the flat-packed prisons of depression. I mean, wow. That is just boom. And it's that's what a beginning. And then he starts telling a story of this woman, offerings on her cheeks of whatever ached her so that one that would be a gift that bridged earth and absent sky. I've never seen crying described in quite a lyrical way before. Contrast wasted on the other cheek. Just amazing. And then there's a man fading away, finally giving into the indifferent decay. It's so melancholy, the first story. I mean, there's a theme, a pervasive theme of melancholy through the whole piece. And he gives it the overarching title of Heartbreak Horizon, which is quite apt, considering that particular theme unites the 3 discrete stories, and yet he's brought them together as almost like a short story anthology. She hates the fact that it's not hard being yourself in a ghost town. That hit me so hard. I thought, my God, that's profound. That is just, that in itself is almost a standalone brevity. Again, it's Katie Weaver of Dreams out there in our gal in Edinburgh, my saucy Scott friend, as I like to call her. She stresses that one of the things that really impacts on her are the endings on poems. And because of her comments like that, she's sharpened my focus on how poems how the writers bring the story to conclusion. And these three, my God, now who will watch me become dust? Who do I get to scream at? I'm leaving. Somehow it hurts worse to know I'm not the only one grieving the end of our love. And wow. I mean, powerful endings on all three of these. So this is, Ben, thank you so much for this spectacular piece of writing that our humble contest inspired. I mean, I am thrilled that we've got writers out there that see all this in our simple contests. So thank you for this. Take it away, Dan. I'm done.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. Every single thing that you said. You know, Ben is a man with a lot to say, and it is all captivating. He has a lot of, you know, there's people with a lot to say. Ben has a lot to say that is captivating and inspiring. Both of his artwork and his words. And
yes.
I know in the comments there, Robbie, you said the picture is just captivating, and I agree. This is a beautiful picture by him. But what did you think, Robbie, of the poem?
Well, the first thing that I thought was elemental. That's the word that came to my mind. And there was the same lines hit me as Cap there, that it was it's easy to be, where was the exact line? I lost it. But about, yeah, here we go. It's not that hard being yourself in a ghost town. And yeah, that really is an anchor for me for making it feel like the whole thing is like this unexpected inversion, like the whole poem. It's it's hard to put into words sometimes what you're trying to say, but kind of the idea of, well, you know, like usually something that's easy, a lot of times if it's something that's easy, it's not such a bad thing, but you know, it's not great when it's when you find it easy to succumb to a drink, you know, or like, because like I guess I thought of that because of the end of the towards the end of the poem that maybe she won't, you know, have a drink at night, and that, and so yeah, the whole poem had that kind of unexpected inversion that really gave it a gut punch, and with the elemental thing too, it's just like with this whale and the person, it's like a dream in the ocean, but the ocean is like, again, it's kind of an unexpected inversion because you think about dreams in the ocean, you think about the subconscious and that, but the whale is up in the air. It looks like it's like almost up in the sky. So it's like the sea creature and it's the unconscious, but he's almost in flight, right? So, is that his own artwork?
Yes, it is.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Ben, pretty much, if you read anything Ben does, he usually has his own artwork along with it, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, he does that with all of his. Which is the only artist or only writer I've seen out there that does that consistently. Mm-hmm. And if you just go on his website and just scan down, you'll see samples of his artwork. It has a very I don't like comparing artists because everyone's an individual, but it almost has a reminiscent of Peter Max theme to it, that very clearly defined imagery.
Yeah.
A very, very blocked, not a lot of diffusing hues, just a very distinctive, almost cubist in his style. But I like it because it is so clear.
Diffusing hues,
like
that's
clear,
what
but not
the Playboy's...
Like razor sharp to the point of, like, where it's, like almost harshly sharp, you know? And his
yes.
colors, I like his palette, because it almost looks, I can't tell if that's, like, a darker Prussian blue, but it almost looks like a darker
yes.
Prussian blue. And
yeah.
it has, like, that kind of titanium white, like, I have that great wave off of Tokugawa. I always forget the name of the wave. Great wave off of Tokugawa. Great wave off of, anyways,
are you talking
great,
about the woodblock? Are you talking about
yeah,
Japanese,
yeah.
Japanese
woodblock?
Yes.
Yeah, it has that kind of color scheme because of the titanium white and the Prussian blue. And his red, it brings out the whole thing. Like the red and the green, the way they're contrasted in the painting is just it's gorgeous. I'm going to definitely have to cruise his artwork online.
Yeah, I will post a link to Peter Max. So you can see the comparison I'm making. Peter Max's imagery is also very clearly delineated. He uses a similar palette, but Peter Max's is more pervaded by pastels and not the subtlety of Ben Hart's. Peter Max is considered pop art. I believe the late 60s and early 70s. And he's very distinctive. You saw him everywhere. Very, very popular at the time. A lot of poster art, I'll pull him up on Wikipedia and I'll post a link. So if you want to take a look at it, but I agree with you. He has a great palette and he has a very distinctive style.
I enjoy talking to someone who investigates the world as thoroughly as I do. I don't find many people like that, but you're one of them.
What's that?
You world as thoroughly as I do. You just have all these interests that are like in these corners that nobody else touches. You know,
I am I'm almost a polymath. I'm fascinated by everything and everyone. Guys, you want to get an insight to the way I think? Go onto my page and find for the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
It kind of gives you a little bit of an insight into the way I think, because I do look every place I go. I look at the ceiling. Because no one else does. And it actually got me, we were in St. Stephen's, which I believe, God forgive me, Vienna, St. Stephen's Cathedral. It has catacombs. And we were in the catacombs getting a tour by a guide whose English, fortunately, was better than my Viennese. But does anyone have any questions? And of course, Breeden raised her hand and said, yes. I pointed at the ceiling and said, what's that? In the ceiling, and no one else had noticed it except me, was a hand carved in the ceiling, pointing. That was weird. Nobody noticed it.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. I walk all the time, and a lot of times I look up every single time. I look at the stars, I look at the sun, at the birds, at the cloud. Every single day, and it's the same way I think most people miss that. I don't know how. It's a show every single day. I agree 100%.
They come inured to life.
They don't want to look up from their phone. There was this picture I really wanted to save. I wish I saved it. Sometimes you find those where there was this it was at a parade, and there was this old woman with this look of, like, you know, wonderment on her face, and everybody else was looking at their phone. So it was at a parade, and she's looking at the parade, and everyone else looking at their phone, and I'm like, there you go right there. But cool. All right, so we're going to go on. We're
20 minutes away from closing time, and we probably have a considerable piece of body of work to cover.
We got about eight or nine right now, so yeah.
Oh, let's
crank away here.
Yep.
So I'm going to
grade bigger.
No worries, no worries. So I'm going to play, I'm going to read one by my friend Afaziana, and it's your turn, Bobby, but I'm going to read because you get to read Amy after this one. So
fair enough.
Continue that trend of you being Amy's, what's the word?
I'm channeling Amy.
Yeah, what's that word of the people who used to announce, like, the jousters, and what's that word I'm trying to think of? I know you know what I mean. The herald. You could be your Amy's herald. Yeah. All right, this one is by Afaziana, and it is just simply titled, inspired by the Michael Vincent Minnelli's Field of the Lonely Ones. Wind is the only sound I can tolerate when my nerves begin to deteriorate or there is much to contemplate. It plays many instruments, even in the field's isolation, grains, dirt, and clouds, with my clothes chiming in. Nimbostratus pewter to porpoise, foreshadowing a sodden bombardment. Water is welcome company. End poem. And Afaziana, amazing. I don't read enough of your work, and this one really struck me. The wind is the only sound I can tolerate when my nerves begin to deteriorate. And I can't agree with it more. You know, the world is really noisy. You know, we've learned how to tune it out. But if you're walking around during the day or any time, like right now, at least where I am in the world, if I went outside, I'd be kind of quiet because it's night. But during the day, there's so much noise going around. And when you can just hear the wind and the way she said it, it plays many instruments. That part I really, really love. Because it is true, because the wind isn't just the wind. The wind does play things. It moves the birds around. It directs the bird's song because, you know, wind can make it sound different. It makes the trees sound. It you know, just even going against man-made things like houses. Like, the wind is a symphony in its own. And, you know, that is much more of something to concentrate on and to really get your nerves going. I know, you know, get your nerves calm. I know Afaziana said that she's always had some nerve issues and some things with lots of noise, but I can, you know, I've never had that luckily, but I can still feel the same thing. So I thought this was really beautiful, and it goes well with the picture because it's, you know, it's that storm. So she's waiting for that storm, to come in, to cool her off with the water. But I just love that feel of, you know, I want everything else to kind of go away, and I just want to hear that symphony of the wind and let that speak to me instead, and that's just enough for me. So beautiful brevity, Afaziana. Thank you so much for writing. And we'll go with Bobby.
Oh, my goodness, I expected our guest to speak first. I can identify with that because with me it's rain. To me, there is no better tranquilizer. Nothing soothes. I find more soothing than the sound of rain. I have been known to sit out under cover for hours, just listening to the rain, because I call it, you know, I call it a white noise lullaby, and I find it so soothing and so primal. So I can understand what she's saying in her poem. And this is some brevity, which is surprising because I believe that's a departure for Afaziana. But I like what she says. It plays many instruments, even in the field's isolation, grains, dirt, and clouds, with my clothes chiming in. And she's right. You know, it will pick things up, and it not only does it may play instruments, but it also creates art because as it's playing with the dried leaves on the surface of the ground, especially in the woods, as it's picking up dried leaves and creating that wonderful crackling noise, it's also drawing with them, blowing them around, and creating this living art, this living canvas. So I'm really, really glad that she pointed that out to us, because I'd never really thought about the wind in this particular context, and now I will.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, white noise is I have tinnitus, which acts up sometimes, so I need white noise, and I'm just I can't sleep if I'm hearing little noises. It wakes me up all night. So white noise, I sleep with white noise all the time. So I get that. A lot of people do. And the rain is actually a really good one. It's a popular one. That works well.
I call it white noise lullaby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's also if you get near running water, like a stream or cascade or a brook that where it's running over rocks. And you get that wonderful gurgling and that liquid sound. Also, that I call that a white noise lullaby too. Is that something?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like staring at fire. You could just listen to it for hours. It's hypnotic.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. You're like staring at a fire. Absolutely. Cool. So, Robbie, go for it. You get the last word on this one.
Well, even though it didn't have that poetic structure or form at all, it very, very much reminded me of one of those like Zen koans, you know, like how, especially like how they have a lot of the nature inspired ones, because it had that very condensed, condensed is the wrong word, like again, like even though these, like this is longer sentences than that here. But even though, like, structurally it's longer sentences and such, it has kind of almost like the intellectual or artistic feel of, like, a Zen koan through each of these three stanzas. And especially because it's nature-based. And it made me think of a lot of things that I've come across in nature and just in my various travels. Like, you're mentioning about the wind playing, and in this poem it talks about the wind playing other instruments, and it can happen, like, whether it's in nature or man-made places and structures and that. Like, I was at a gelato place, of all things, and they almost always have their window open even just a little bit, like partially, like even when it's cooler,
yeah.
They just... Because it's
yeah.
like an outdoor cafe kind of a feel to it. Anyways, like the wind was rushing through it, and it gave the eeriest. It was like almost like a ghost, like ooh, like a whoosh, but with it, like ooh to it. And I was commenting on that with the person there, and we were both kind of like, yeah, that sounds kind of weird, but yeah, I definitely agree with how the wind is. It's like. It's the element by itself, but then it gets conducted and manipulated by whatever it goes through. And it's not often where I have to look up a word, but I enjoy that because I am quite verbose, I would like to think. And so I like to be challenged. And when I saw Nimbostratus, I literally said, what is that? And so I looked that up. Oh, okay, it's a type of cloud. So I enjoyed the expansion of my vocabulary there.
I like the way she called Nimbostratus pewter to porpoise. I really enjoyed the subtlety of that foreshadowing a sudden bombardment. Water is what that last again, like Weaver says, that last stanza is almost a standalone brevity.
Absolutely, yeah, no, it's beautiful. We got a lot packed into a brevity, so awesome job, Faziana. Thank you very much. And Faziana and I have a show Thursday night. If anybody is interested, I believe it's this Thursday. I don't know. I don't know what time is anymore. I can't keep track of it.
Right? Should I tell us?
It's either this Thursday or it's oh no, you're my first Bobby, you know. So there you go. But it was either this Thursday or it's 12 Thursdays ago or it's 3 years from now. I can't tell time. It's I don't know where things are anymore. That's right. I just posted the same poem twice. So I think we should have time for this one. We have 10 minutes here, but Bobby, if you want, this will probably be our last one. So for tonight, so Bobby, if you want to read this.
We've got another SoundCloud. Let's see.
We'll see.
Let's see. Okay, so, let me refresh here. We've got Amy. Yeah. Yeah, you liked her. You just posted her twice.
I did. That's right. You only have to read it once, though.
Okay. Well, all right. Darn. Okay. Amy. Matinee by My Fragments to My Fragments. Inside me is a grand theater of Baroque walls, cobwebbed etchings, a pipe organ, which plays in haunting tones. The stage is set with smoky backdrop, familiar shapes forming from its recesses with each actress's line. Shaded boxes host shadows of me, watching apparitions enact my memories in hyperbole. Each seat filled with my fragments, broken from me by each splinter of trauma, each cutting remark. Amongst the boxes, spare props long forgotten, left discarded by a side stage exit, hides the youngest. Broken free at life's first hurdles, left cowering, watching worst waves come to pass. Face half hidden by sentinel sideboard, barrier between bedded feet and sinister sleeve entities roaming the dark. Acting on stage in times introspective by looming clouds of me, as the eldest and the youngest shard watches herself take shape. Matinee memories repeating scene after scene as flaked incarnations fade and grow in ovation overtures, with each showing the story turns askew, a detail changed, or kindred endings overlapping with their truth, until the oldest tales are fairy tales, wrapped in remembered myth, as hazy as the backdrops they float from. Yet they catch more roses with every performance, always feeling more vivid, more real than the newest, truest acts of adulthood. End poem.
Excellent, Bobby. Excellent. The official reader of Amy. An awesome job, Amy. We appreciate you writing for us a ton. And Robbie, go for it, man.
Well, with the title being Matinee to My Fragments of My by My Fragments to My Fragments, like the fact that it says matinee, it did have that feel to me. It felt like it was, everything was on a stage, like the poem was being acted out on a stage, and kind of like the stage is life. It had that very much that, like, not quite the literal storytelling element, but it still had the feel of a story was being told. Like maybe not in traditional storytelling form, but it felt like it was going through like a different story in someone's life, and especially like at the end how it closes off truest acts of adulthood. So it kind of wraps it up in that way towards the end, and I felt like the whole poem had a very well written out, like cohesive structure and narrative. You really were able to follow throughout and have a consistent feel all throughout.
She has a great feel to her, and really makes it easy on the reader. And what I mean by that is, like, you can immerse yourself in there. It's almost like whenever I read Amy's, it's almost like musical because of that. You know, pop music we all listen to, we like it because we understand it. You know, so we can easily relate. And I think the way she writes is like that, where you can easily relate and read what she's saying, and then be able to then get into the kind of deep meaning of it, which she always has. So she has a great style. Bobby, as always, you did a great read, and if you want to post that last comment on this, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm going to keep my comments brief because I've been scrolling through what we've got left, And the next one I see the Storyteller by Dark Night of the Soul. It's brief, and I think it's significant that we try and close the show with that, because if you notice, it's got 41 comments on it. It's only been out there for a week or two. It's got 41 comments. I mean, this is drawn significant interest. So I think that's something I'd like to close the show with. But as far as Amy's, of course, I'm always captivated by her writing. She's a very engaging writer. In this particular, I'm intrigued, mesmerized, I would almost say, by how she has folded the story back on herself. Now, she selected the same prompt that Stellina and Arcana did. Is that same with the young girl? Is the Theater of the Spirits? I think it's called Theater of Ghosts. She selected the same prompt. Look how different her inspiration was. Her writing. They told a story of someone else. She told a story of herself and her life and how she saw her past and her present and her future as all audiences to each other. How fascinating I found that, and just amazingly multifaceted. I really enjoyed this piece, and I'd like to, I'm going to pull rank and go ahead and post the Storyteller, if you would please, and I'd like to read that.
We'll go on there and we can read it. I don't know if we'll have time for comments, but we can definitely read it.
It's a very short piece. We've got 4 minutes left. It's by Dark Night of the Soul. It's called The Storyteller.
Yep. Go ahead and read it.
He sat with Jacob every day. He was such a devoted dad, feeding his mind with tales of castles, overseeing vast rivers and grasslands. Jacob was the center of each fable. He was such a committed dad, making his boy a hero of renown in vintage histories where great dragons trod. When he turned 7 or 8, he made him a knight. He was such a giving dad. At 16, he whipped him up a maiden fair. At 21, a medieval wedding to rival long-dead kings. Jacob was cursed with a body that took away his movement and speech, forever bound to the confines of his bed. Dad built him a vivid imagery world to live in his head. He saw Jacob as a gift. He was so proud to be a dad and gave his boy the best life he could give. His dad was a talented storyteller. End poem.
Beautiful read. If you can give a 30-second comment, Robbie, that would be great.
But it was very much a powerful idea of giving someone a liberation from their body through their mind. You see that in fiction, like when Christopher Pike was confined to his chair in Star Trek and horrible fate. And they just were able to give them his life back through the illusion in his head of just living in his head and finally being mobile again. And that was really powerful to me.
Absolutely. And you can close this out, Bobby.
I've had to comment on this one. I said, powerful, masterful storytelling, communicating the deep, selfless, unconditional love of a father for his child. Deeply emotional, the love of the parent for their child rises to the surface with every word and unequivocally captures the heart of the reader. The poet's skill in painting this vivid word picture touches the heart, reminding me of the words of the 1969 song by the Hollies, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother." If you've never listened to that song, I will put the link up at the close of our show. But this is superb writing. And like I had noticed, I tend to scan through everything before the show, and I noticed they had 41 comments on it. And it's only been out there since 5 April. So this is a piece of writing that has really captured the audience. And my compliments, Dark Night of the Soul, and thank you for – and it wrote it on one prompt. And it was just what he showed at the top. And I thought this was so moving. So what did you think, Dan?
I thought it was great, but it is time to go. So I appreciate everybody's participation.
I'm going to quickly give people a taste of the – and I just opened it last night. We have the silent digital poetry of Daria Petrilli, female-focused, again – this is a digital art, like our current artist here. And we've got two entries already, Ben Hart being among them, some amazingly gorgeous pictures. Please go check them out. Thank you for everyone in the bleachers for staying with us. Thank you, Ben, for trying. I hope the Shakedown Cruise rats out the problems. Robbie, thank you so much for calling in. You made a good show even better.
Night, everybody.
Good night, Dan.
Good night, Dobranoc.